Welcome back for another episode of WVU Marketing Communications. Brought to you by the good folks at West Virginia University and their online data marketing communications program. First program that sits at the intersection of data and marketing. With the man squarely planted there. The man who's going to bring both into light here today. Let's bring on our host today, which is Matt Cummings. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Paul. Thank you.
How are you?
It's good to be back.
What's it like to sit at the crossroads of data and communications here, marketing? I mean, I didn't even know those two things came together.
The road to get here is bumpy, but the view is outstanding.
Yes, so. Exactly.
Thank you. You know, we have another interesting show on tap today. It's focused on a topic that I know a number of marketers, HR departments, compliance departments, and managers are wrestling with, and that is social media ethics and the Federal Trade Commission. Even before the current frenzy over what we'll call tweets gone wild, our guest today, Joe Barnes, would walk into businesses, for-profits, and nonprofits asking a pretty simple question: what's your social media policy? As you might imagine, the usual response was something along the lines of, we don't have one, or, oh, go talk to marketing about that. In his travels, Joe realized that nearly every business and organization he walked into, no matter the size, did not really have a documented social media policy, nor did they clearly understand or even know what the FTC requires in way of disclosure. That's why he wrote the book Social Media Ethics Made Easy: How to Comply with FTC Disclosure Requirements. The book is available from Business Expert Press or on Amazon. Joe is also a full-time faculty lecturer in marketing, business, communication, and social digital mobile marketing at Seattle University. He also consults for businesses and nonprofits nationwide with a business digital3000.net. And he has a long-term relationship with the West Virginia University Integrated Marketing Communications Master's Program as an instructor and frequent presenter at the university's Integrate Conference. He also received the prestigious Alexia Venita's Online Teaching Award from WVU. His background spans more than 20 years of senior-level journalism experience, and he's also consulted for more than 75 businesses and nonprofits across the country. With that, it's my pleasure to welcome Joe Barnes to the program. Hi, Joe. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks very much, Matt. You know, I can't tell whether it's my going away celebration of life or an introduction, but I'll take it.
Quite the eulogy there, huh?
It is, yeah. Nice to be around to hear it.
Excellent. Well, thanks for being with us. You know, I understand that you've researched in writing this book the good, the bad, and the ugly side, right, of social media and social media content. And you likely saw a lot of examples of what not to do in this space. Are there some that you can share with us to get us started?
There are some I can share, and I don't think a day goes by in the last few years that I have not had a morning where I couldn't find 50 examples at least of cases. So I'll just give you a few. And you have to try to visualize these, because in each case in the book, I've captured the screenshot. But it just speaks to why policies are needed. IHOP tweeted a picture of a stack of pancakes with a dollop of butter on top with the words, "Flat, but has a great personality." Very offensive to women.
Right.
A nurse, I can't believe this one, a nurse tweeted this: "So sleepy here in the ICU, will someone please code and give me something exciting to do?" A woman who is a PR specialist working for an internet firm tweeted, "Going to Africa, hope I don't get AIDS. Just kidding, I'm white." Well, by the time her plane landed, of course, she was fired. But, you know, you have to think what goes through people's minds. Baked goods producer Entenmann received flack for using the hashtag not guilty on the day of the verdict for Casey Anthony's trial. That was the hashtag that was going around. And for some crazy reason, they tried to tie into it who's not guilty about eating all the tasty treats they want. It's like, why would Entenmann's try to tie into the Casey Anthony trial?
Right.
Here's one, Kenneth Cole. So there's riots in the streets of Cairo, and Kenneth Cole tweets, millions are in an uproar in Cairo. Rumor is they heard the new spring selection is available online at, and then they gave the Kenneth Cole URL. And here's a horrible one. Right after Superstorm Sandy obliterated the East Coast several years back, here's what the Gap tweeted. All impacted by Sandy, stay safe. We'll be doing lots of Gap.com shopping today. How about you? Well, millions don't even have their homes or power.
Right.
And here's the last one I'll share with you. This has come to be known as Cisco Fatty, a famous case of a woman who had been offered a job and lost it with one tweet. Cisco Fatty does not refer to the woman, but it refers to what she tweeted. Cisco just offered me a job. Now I have to weigh the utility of a fatty paycheck against the daily commute to San Jose and hating my job. Well, guess what, folks? She did get a call and say, and the hiring manager said, no worry, you don't have to show up.
Yeah. So A for creativity, but F obviously for execution. And, you know, really some sad examples there of ill-advised social media content. You know, I'm all for authenticity, right? And you want brands to be authentic. But I'm sure in your research, you also uncovered a number of examples where businesses are trying to, you know, fake out customers, if you will, when it comes to reviews or even some of that social media content. Did you see any examples of that?
Yeah, and I did see several examples. You know, one is, I think at the local level where it's most likely to happen, and mm-hmm. sometimes it happens with well-intentioned business owners, small restaurants, small bar and grill, they ask friends to write glowing reviews. Well, as we'll talk about later, that's illegal. CBC News, and you can find this on YouTube, there's an amazing video story, created a fake food truck called Cheese Dog. And then through an online promotion agency, people volunteered to write fake reviews, and they also did video reviews for $5 each. This was a fake food truck. They set up the website. There was no Cheese Dog business or food truck. And it's amazing how many people would be willing to write, you give them $5, here's the review, written or on video. It's just crazy.
So what does the Federal Trade Commission expect businesses to do? And what should these businesses have in place to help enforce, you know, good quality social media practices?
Well, it's interesting because I think this flies well below the radar. Mm-hmm. The Federal Trade Commission expects businesses to create a social media policy to train all stakeholders in the business, and I'll talk about who that is, and to require disclosure in social media posts that give the reader context. So Andy Cernovitz, who wrote the book Word of Mouth Marketing, says it can be as simple as these 10 words. I work for West Virginia University, and this is my personal opinion. Mm-hmm. I work for Boeing, and this is my personal opinion. Once you do that, you know, you're beginning to get some context. Reviews, whether it's for a product or service, must be based on a real experience. And mm-hmm. what the Federal Trade Commission has said is you cannot ask for a fake review, you cannot write a fake review, and you cannot ask friends or coworkers to fraudulently up your YouTube views.
Social media policy in place, training, and disclosure. Are these guidelines, Joe, or are they laws? And what does the FTC do when they find violations?
Great question, Matt. The FTC lists these as guidelines.
Okay.
However, the FTC has the authority to fine a business And the agency has done that in the past. We've seen cases where a state attorney general has gone after businesses for fake reviews, for instance, on Yelp. In New York, the state attorney general fined several restaurants $350,000 for fake reviews. And it's estimated that upwards of 15%, maybe a little bit more, of reviews on Yelp are not authentic reviews. So the guidelines themselves don't have the force of law. However, the practices that are inconsistent with those guidelines and violate the FTC could result in fines for a business. Is the FTC going out looking for these? No. But if a state attorney general or the Federal Trade Commission gets notified about this and they launch an investigation and they find fraud, they have the ability to levy fines. Does that make sense?
It does. You know, what are some of the common questions, and this will be the last question before we go to break, what are some common questions that you get from businesses and organizations, recognizing, obviously, that the FTC expects them to have a social media policy in place about creating that policy?
A lot of questions. And these have been posed to me. These have been posed to the Federal Trade Commission. And I'll try to go through some of these because I think this is where it really gets practical. So one is, can you give or loan people in a marketing campaign free goods or services? So if you have retail and you want to reach tweens, can you give out 2,000 pair of hot jeans that you really want to put into the marketplace because you think these you want to get to influencers? The answer is yes, but they must disclose that, for instance, in their Instagram post. Or the same thing with electronics. I was given a free Sony laptop to try or to keep for 6 months, and here's my review. Now, as a reader of that review, you understand the context. So that's one way. If the endorser has been paid or given something of value to talk about the product, should that connection be disclosed? Absolutely. Again, as a reader, you want to know, is there something of value behind the review? And that's very important. And that might happen especially in summer. You know, you're reading this glowing review on somebody's blog about this fabulous hotel or, you know, why you should go to this wonderful place in Bermuda or Hawaii.
Right.
And if you knew the hotel had paid the blogger hundreds of dollars to say great things, you would want to know that. So should that be disclosed? Absolutely. The blogger should do that. Some people have asked, so my Facebook page identifies my employer. Should I include an additional disclosure when I post on Facebook about how useful our products or services are? And the answer is yes. Again, it's a good idea. People reading your posts in their news feed or on your profile page might not always see or remember where you work or what products your employer makes.
Right.
It also applies to videos, too. If I upload a video to YouTube and that video requires a disclosure, one question comes up, can I put the disclosure in the description that I upload together with the video? And the answer from the FTC is no, because it's easy for consumers to miss disclosures in the video description, and people might not even take a look at the description page. And the same thing applies to if you do a hyperlink related to a video or putting your disclosure at the end of the video. You want it to be clear and conspicuous. And that's
so it sounds like you know that clear disclosure, erring on the side of disclosure is always a best practice. We're going to take a quick break now, and we're going to come back. We're going to dig more into social media policy development with Joe Barnes. We'll be right back after this.
And just a couple of quick reminders, as we do every week, that you know already that marketing is about more than ads and press releases. It's about building relationships. And if you're looking to build relationships with other marketing professionals, there is a place to do it. You can connect with these people, these other marketing pros, at West Virginia University's upcoming conference right around the corner here in beautiful Morgantown, West Virginia. I've been there. It's scenic, particularly this time of year, August 1st through the 4th. You will participate in what they call the Integrate Network and learn from industry leaders, speakers representing large and innovative organizations like Cisco and Facebook, as well as agencies like Cappuccino and Fujikata. You can register today. It's pretty simple. integrate.wvu.edu. That's the Integrate Networking Conference coming up. This right around the corner, August 1st through the 4th at West Virginia University. integrate.wvu.edu. All right, we're going to throw some more initials at you here about the West Virginia University's Online Data Marketing Communications Program, the people sponsoring this. It's the first graduate program to focus on data's impact on marketing communications. You can learn innovative strategies from award-winning faculty, like the people we're talking with today, as you shape the future of marketing. Right here, you can do it each and every month. Check in and learn more at dmc.wvu.edu. That stands for the Data Marketing Communications Program at West Virginia University. All right, with all those initials out of the way, let's head back to our show. And before we do, I got some truth in advertising. I got to tell you guys, I have solicited. I've never paid for them, but I've asked people to, please give me a good review and whatnot. I had a plumber the other day, and the first thing he said at the end is, "Hey, if you like us, would you please go review us?" What I'm hearing from your guest is you can't even solicit these things, even if you don't pay for them?
That's a good question, Joe. No, do you want to take
actually
that?
Actually, you can. Sure. Actually, you can. You can do something like that. If you, you know, if you liked our service, please post that on social media. So you can do that.
But are they allowed to solicit me as part of the close, or are they allowed to say, please, if you like this, go do this?
Yes, they are. Because you've actually had the experience with the service, or a household repair or something like that, and you're writing on your own whatever you want to say.
But I can't have my friends and relatives
do it.
I can't have my friends and relatives or my wife or somebody just go on my site if they've never used my services and just pretend like they're saying something nice.
Correct.
Okay.
Or
now
if they said, look, you know, if you give us a glowing review, we'll give you $50.
Or free meal. Or I've seen that, too, where you get a free...
Or free meal.
Yeah, free hot dog or something. Free french fries, if you say something. All right, well, this is getting cloudy here. This is getting confusing.
Don't want to incentivize that. That's for sure. Thanks for keeping Paul and I safe, Joe. We appreciate it. Before the break, we talked about disclosure and the importance of disclosure. Obviously, the importance of relevance and being appropriate as well. What should not go into a social media policy, though, Joe? And how lengthy should these be?
Well, that's a great question. What should not go in? You should not put in information about employee rights. And let me try to explain this. And this relates to National Labor Relations Board rulings. The NLRB has been making a number of rulings, and they're leaning heavily toward the rights of employees. So unless an employee discloses confidential information online, the NLRB has ruled that employees have the protected right to make derogatory statements about the terms and conditions of employment. Now, we would hope that they don't do that, but they are allowed to do that, just as they're allowed to walk in the hallway and say, you know, I hate my boss, or I hate the fact that we have to work 80 hours a week. They're also allowed to do that online. So my advice is don't get into this area, because if you do, the NLRB is very likely to rule in favor of the employee.
Can you help us out? Can we find some templates to help us create effective social media policies? And where
Absolutely.
Can we find those?
It's if you go to socialmedia.org /disclosure/ there, this came from Andy Cernovitz again, who headed socialmedia.org, and mm-hmm. there are about 10 or 12 templates, and they're very simple to use. One is organizational, one is for board of directors, one is for volunteers. So these are very easy to download, to craft. I would say download all of them and save them, even if you don't need them now. And it would take about maybe, I've done this before, maybe 2 to 3 hours to craft using these templates, a social media policy for an organization. So I've used these for nonprofits, for for-profits. The templates work very well. And it becomes very simple to create one for an organization.
So it doesn't sound like it's a very complicated process, especially using some of the templates. What about some brands that are really leading in this space, some good examples of social media policies that are out there?
There are some real good examples. And if you Google what I'm about to say, you can find their examples online. Intel. Social media guidelines, great example online. Oracle social media policy, very good example. Okay. Cisco social media policy, Dell social media policy, Mayo Clinic social media policy, and there's another one, Coca-Cola social media policy. All very nice examples, very clear, very easy to take a look at, and not overwhelming. And by the way, you want to stay away from overwhelming. I was sitting at a conference one time with somebody from probably the largest coffee retailer in the United States, and she had a binder of about 300 pages. And I said, "What's that?" And she said, "Well, I'm finishing up our social media policy, and this is going to go to all the baristas." And I said, "With all due respect, you're not going to get a 17-year-old barista to read 300 pages. I said,
right.
That policy's got to be on one sheet of paper.
Or as an infographic or a flow chart, right?
Absolutely.
Can you give the URL again for the social media templates that you had identified earlier? Just want to make sure that our listeners have an opportunity to write that down.
Sure. It's socialmedia.org/disclosure/
Excellent. Appreciate it. Joe, you know, this has been a great conversation. Do you have any final thoughts or suggestions before we wrap things up here today?
I think my final thought is do this and bring it up wherever you work or for any nonprofits that you volunteer for. This is important. It's important because it will help us have better businesses that are more authentic, more reasonable, and avoid problems downstream. And the more people that get policies in place and raise their hand and say, "Well, I'll help create one, even if it's for a volunteer, as a volunteer for a nonprofit that you work with," that will make a difference. And you're helping really shape the way communications and marketing will happen in the future.
Some great, good common sense advice and, you know, things that we've heard and applied across, you know, marketing communications and just life in general. Surprising how many brands fail in this area, and some great recommendations on being authentic and reasonable in your communication. I appreciate you being here, and thank you so much for spending time with us today. And thank you for listening to WVU Marketing Communications Today from West Virginia University. I hope you found today's episode as informative as I have. Until next time, take care.
You've been listening to WVU Marketing Communications Today, brought to you live from West Virginia University, a biweekly program that sits at the intersection of data-driven decision-making and marketing practice, only on the Funnel Radio Network, for at-work listeners like you.